The previous day, a scaffolding on the south bastion had collapsed under the weight of the stones, and had hurled three of the convicts working upon it to their death on the cobbles far below. Hugo Barnard, the overseer, had muttered as he stood over their crushed corpses, "Three birds with one stone. I'll have the next careless bastard that kills himself thrashed within an inch of his life," and burst out laughing at his own gallows humour. Daniel took a turn of the rope end around his good shoulder, and anchored it as the rest of the team reached out, seized the swinging block, and hauled it onto the trestle. Between them they manhandled it into the gap at the top of the wall, with the Dutch stonemason in his leather apron shouting instructions at them. They stood back, panting after it had dropped into place, every muscle in their bodies aching and trembling from the effort. But there was no time to rest. From the courtyard below, Hugo Barnard was already yelling, "Get that cradle down here! Swiftly now, I'll come up and give you a touch of the persuader!" And he flicked out the knotted leather thongs of his whip. Daniel peered over the edge of the scaffold. Suddenly he stiffened and glanced over his shoulder at Hal. "There go Abberley and the other lads." Hal stepped up beside him and looked down. From the doorway to the dungeon a small procession emerged. The four black seamen were led out into the wintry sunshine. Once again they were wearing light chains. "Look at those lucky bastards," Ned Tyler muttered. They had not been included in the labour teams, but had stayed in the dungeon, resting and being fed an extra meal each day to fatten them up while they waited to go on the auction block. This morning, Muncier had ordered the four men to strip naked. Then Dr. Saar, the company surgeon, had come down to the cell and examined them, probing and peering into their ears and mouths to satisfy himself as to the state of their health. When the surgeon had left, Muncier ordered them to anoint themselves all over from a stone jar of oil. Now their skins shone in the sunlight like polished ebony. Though they were still lean and finely drawn from their stay aboard the Gull, the coating of oil made them appear sleek prime specimens of humanity. Now they were being led out through the gates of the castle onto the open parade, where already a crowd had gathered. Before he passed through the gates, Abberley raised his great round head and looked up at Hal on the scaffold high above. For one moment their eyes met. There was no need for either to shout a message, chancing a cut of the cane from their keepers, and Abberley strode on without looking back. The auction block was a temporary structure that at other times was used as a gibbet on which the corpses of executed criminals were placed on public view. The four men were lined up on the platform, and Dr. Saar mounted the platform with them and addressed the crowd. "I have examined all of the four slaves being offered for sale today," he stated, lowering his head to peer over the tops of his wire-framed eyeglasses. "I can give the assurance that all of them are in good health. Their eyes and teeth are sound, and they are hale in limb and body." The crowd was in a festive mood. They clapped at the doctor's announcement and gave him an ironical cheer as he climbed down from the block and hurried back towards the castle gates. Jacobus Hopp stepped forward and held up a hand for silence. Then he read from the proclamation of the sale, the crowd jeering and imitating him every time he stuttered. "By order of His Excellency the Governor of this colony of the Honourable East India Company, the colony of the Dutch East India Company, I am authorised to offer for sale to the highest bidder four Negro slaves." He broke off and removed his hat respectfully as the governor's open carriage came down the avenue from the residence, passing through the gardens and wheeling out onto the open parade behind the six glossy greys. Lord Cumbrae and the governor's wife sat side by side on the open leather seats facing forward, and Colonel Schroeder sat opposite them. The crowd opened to let the carriage come to the foot of the block, where Fredericus, the coloured coachman, called the team to a halt and wound down the handbrake. None of the passengers dismounted. Katinka lolled elegantly on the leather seat, twirling her parasol, and chatting gaily to the two men. On the platform, Hopp was thrown into confusion by the arrival of these exalted visitors, and stood flushing, stammering, and blinking in the sunlight until Schroeder called out impatiently, "Get on with it, fellow! We didn't come here to watch you goggle and gape!" Hopp replaced his hat, and bowed first at Schroeder, then at Katinka. He raised his voice. "The first lot is the slave Abeli. He is about 30 years of age and is believed to be a member of the Kwanda tribe from the east coast of Africa. As you are aware, the Kwanda Negroes are much appreciated as field slaves and herdsmen. He could also be trained into an excellent wagon driver or coachman." He paused to mop his sweaty face and gathered his tripping tongue. Then he went on. "Abeli is said to be a skilled hunter and fisherman. He would bring in a good income to his owner from any of these occupations."
"Mynheer Hop, are you hiding anything from us?" Katinka called out.
And Hop was once more thrown into disarray by the question. His stammer became so agonized that he could hardly get the words out.
Greatly esteemed lady,"
he spread his hands helplessly.
I assure you, would you offer for sale a bull wearing clothes?"
Katinka demanded.
"Do you expect us to bid for something that we cannot see?"
As he caught her meaning, Harp's face cleared, and he turned to Abeli.
"Disrobe," he ordered loudly, to bolster his courage while facing this huge wild savage.
For a moment, Abeli stared at him unmoving, then contemptuously slipped the knot of his loincloth and let it fall to the planks under his feet. Naked and magnificent, he stared over their heads at the tabletop mountain. There was a hissing intake of breath from the crowd below. One of the women squealed, and another giggled nervously, but none turned away their eyes.
"Hoots!" Gumbry broke the pregnant pause with a chuckle. "The buyer will be getting a full measure. There is no make-weight in that load of blood sausage. I'll start the bidding at 500 guilders."
"And 100 more," Katinka called out.
The buzzard glanced at her and spoke softly from the corner of his mouth.
"I did not know you were intending to bid, madam." "I will have this one at any price, my lord," she warned him sweetly, "for he amuses me." "I would never stand in the way of a beautiful lady," the buzzard bowed. "But you will not bid against me for the other three, will you?"
"'Tis a bargain, my lord," Katinka smiled. "This one is mine, and you may have the others."
Cambry folded his arms across his chest and shook his head when Hop looked to him to increase the bid.
"Too rich a price for my digestion," he said.
And Hop looked in vain for a buyer in the rest of the crowd. None was foolhardy enough to go up against the governor's wife. Recently they had been given a glimpse of His Excellency's temper in open court.
"The slave Abeli is sold to Mevrouw van der Velde for the sum of 600 guilders,"
Hop sang out, and bowed towards the carriage.
"Do you wish the chain struck off, Mevrouw?"
Katinka laughed.
"And have him bolt for the mountains? No, Mynheer. These soldiers will escort him up to the slave quarters at the residence."
She glanced across at Schroeder, who gave an order to a detachment of green jackets waiting under their corporal at the edge of the crowd. They elbowed their way forward, dragged Abeli down from the block, and led him away up the avenue towards the residence. Katinka watched him go. Then she tapped the buzzard on the shoulder with one finger.
"Thank you, my lord,"